Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hola, Rank Squad. We're off to Spain today to take a look at the latest La Liga season, which kicked off at the weekend and kicked off with some interesting results as well. Before we talk briefly about that, it's worth taking stock of a sublime summer for the Spanish, who cleaned up in the men's international game, winning the Euros, under-23 Olympic gold and the under-19 Euros for good measure. Un verano dorado, a golden summer. My name's Jack Collins, and I'm joined across the water by a man in a place named by a Spaniard and one that maintains a Mediterranean flavour to this day. Live from San Diego, it's transfer guru Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hola. Do I look like I've got that Spanish tan yet, Jack? You can see me. Nobody else can.
It's working. You're working on it. I can see.
Yeah, what do you reckon? Like, who do I look like?
Mikel Arteta?
Lego head himself.
There you go.
I love Spain. In fact, if I had to live somewhere beyond England or America, it would be Spain. Portugal would be like challenging it, but it would be Spain. Love everything about it, from football to the general life culture. And obviously the weather would be pretty handy too. But yeah, it's all up and running. Obviously, we previewed the Premier League before a ball had been kicked. It's quite handy to preview La Liga after we've seen some balls kicked, because actually it gives you a much better gauge of what we're going to get from the season. And I feel our preview actually now will be quite different from what it would have been a week ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we're gonna kind of maintain this for a little while. We'll probably talk about Serie A next week, maybe the Bundesliga the week after, and then we'll go into 5x5. And after that, it feels like the season's really begun, right? We're in that point, there'll be an international break, but we'll have a little bit of stock, I think, of where everyone's at. And especially with the summer being the way it was, with all of the international football, with the Olympics following on, it feels like there was no real break for football this summer. And so the kind of return of all the major leagues, which obviously finishes with the Bundesliga kicking off this weekend, it feels like they're kind of like, whoa, we're back. And no one was really expecting it. Everyone was a little bit confused by all the things that went down. So look, it's been an interesting weekend. Things kicked off and we saw some eye-catching results. Real Madrid dropped points to a very well-organized Mallorca, a rocking Somoa. Atleti played out a chaotic 2-2 draw with Villarreal. Barcelona came from behind to beat Valencia and Mestalla. Strikerless Getafe sneaked a draw at San Mamés with Athletic Club. Real Sociedad lost to Rayo Vallecano. It was chaos in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, it was chaos. I didn't know it started on Thursday, to be honest with you. I didn't know they were starting a day early. So I was really caught out on the back foot. But yeah, caught up on those games on the Friday in the end. But it was, this is what I mean. The preview, I think, takes a little bit of a different slant now, because when you're just studying everything on paper and reading the squads and making assessments of, on face value of what you're seeing in front of you and expecting to unfold, it's one thing. But then you see it put into practice and you remember football isn't played on paper. It's played on grass, and on grass things can happen that are quite weird. And that includes the fact that Real Madrid don't win their opening fixture of the season, and neither do Atletico Madrid, but Barcelona do. And then there are some quirky results along the way as well. So yeah, I mean, I probably watched those three clubs, actually, Barcelona, Real and Atletico, most closely, as I will do over the course of the season, to be honest, quite naturally. But yeah, there were things that intrigued me for all of them. Real Madrid's is the biggest talking point of all, because of the fact that they failed to beat Mallorca with their new fancy front three. It's not Mbappe that scores the goal, it's Rodrigo. And despite going ahead early in the game and looking pretty good early in the game, Real Madrid, it changed. As the game wore on, it totally changed. And by the end of the match, the big talking point is, can this work? Can you play with this front three? Where's Jude Bellingham gone? And is it plausible to only play with a two-man midfield, which is basically what they ended up with for large sections of that Mallorca game? And that seems like a huge risk. So Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating season, mate.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about all three of those games and a lot more on the Patreon on Monday. We did all of the Premier League's opening games, a little bit on Serie A as well. So there's loads more over there. And the link, as ever, is in the description. If you fancy getting yourselves a season ticket to Ranks FC across the course of this season. But we're going to go straight in now into Spain. And we're going to start, as we did last week, the Premier League in terms of a title race. And from where I'm sitting, DJ, it feels like the three big clubs have a real big gap to everybody else. And whilst Girona made incredible inroads in there last year and for a long part of the season were Madrid's closest challengers for that title, obviously they fell away a little bit at the end. I think that whilst there has been improvements or, you know, differences, shall we say, in how the big three are playing, it does feel like those behind them might have dropped off a tad. And I'm quite interested by that pack. But let's start with these front three and let's start with Real Madrid.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that front. We'll get into the detail of the whys. But Real Madrid, I'll be honest, right? I still think they're going to win the league. I still do think that they are going to prove to be the most unstoppable team in this division because of the incredible talent that they've got up top. But Mallorca kind of sent out a message to the rest of the league that, you know, this isn't going to be an invincible season for Real Madrid. We can make sure that they don't get everything their own way this season. And to be honest, the longer that game went on, it was Mallorca who were going to win it, not Real Madrid. And that's probably one of the key lessons I took from it. It was like, this is weird. This is extremely weird. I mean, obviously Real Madrid as well getting a red card so late in the game. A stupid one as well. I think it just showed the headspace that they were in. Ancelotti isn't happy with the performance. He's kind of directed his concerns away from the front three and trying to take it a bit deeper into the side and saying, you know, the front three can only do so much and then you still need your midfield and your defence to function fully as well in order for them to be at their best capacity. But there are... Look, I think one thing that I would probably have missed if I'd have done this a week ago would have been how they cope without Toni Kroos.
Yeah, absolutely.
That already after one game is something that was like blindingly obvious is not there right now because they can't change things up in the same way. They don't have someone, well, they have Modric to come on, obviously, but they were lacking that expertise that Kroos brings and has brought for so long to the centre of the park. And it's all very well having the youthfulness and the guile of the guys that they've brought in and the superstar quality of Mbappe and having, it's still a strong midfield, obviously, when you build it up. But how, you know, I kind of fear for them that Modric is going to have to be used more than they probably planned. And I don't know that that's going to work.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because actually, when you look at the departures, you look at Toni Kroos, obviously, as you say, you look at Nacho, who was club captain. Now that's Luka Modric. And Hossulu, who obviously came back to Real Madrid and was kind of used as an auxiliary striker, had some big moments, but also an experienced footballer, right? In comes Kylian Mbappe and Endrick, who is a prodigy of Brazil. And I don't think we should make it out like everyone in this team is, you know, uber young, because they're not. And there are some experienced heads still in here. And you look at Carvajal and you look at Rudiger in particular, I think, and Courtois, and being like, okay, there are obviously those players, but there is a youthfulness in here that perhaps has been coming for a little while. And obviously it's kind of, it feels like the project's almost come to a level of completion at this point. And I don't mean in terms of what's been won. I kind of mean in terms of where they were trying to go. You look at it years back and it was obviously Modric, Kroos and Casemiro in the middle. You look at the front threes, the great front threes. And we've kind of phased out of that, right? Vinicius has been phased in as the new number seven. Kylian Mbappe has finally arrived as this new number nine. Rodrigo has put out his stall early doors to be like, don't forget about me, I'm here. There's a lot of young, talented players coming through. The midfield, in terms of Fede Valverde, in terms of Camavinga, Tchouameni, Bellingham, has completely shifted on. Yes, Modric is still there, but being utilised in a different capacity. And they feel a little bit light, I think, at centre-back still, which is something that, you know, a lot of people have spoken about, but hasn't been necessarily something that's worried Carlo Ancelotti. He's been speaking about it in a different way and saying, no, I don't need anyone else. You know, Jesus Vallejo has come home. He's been out on loan. I'm not sure that's the answer. He's struggled at Granada and elsewhere. He's not been a player that's, you know, thrived in different positions. But sometimes when a player comes back to Real Madrid, that does happen. And they just feel like they have to make that step up. But I think that, you know, you spoke about the red card. And I wonder if there is an element of Ferland Mendy's red card that you kind of look at and think, are you just incredibly frustrated because everything about this season and all of the hype and all of the build-up has convinced you that you were going to go and win every game? And suddenly you've been frustrated by a Mallorca side, a stadium that started to believe in itself, by Vedat Muriqi, who's an absolutely wonderful footballer. And I absolutely love the pirate. And you've kind of been frustrated by this Mallorca side on the opening day when everything wasn't supposed, this wasn't the script, right? This wasn't, as you said right at the top, this wasn't how it was supposed to go on paper. And I do wonder if in these moments, the lack of a Nacho, the lack of a Kroos is just going to be somewhat something that kind of goes, ooh, how are their heads right now? Because there's a lot of now responsibility on younger players, and I'm not saying 18-year-olds, obviously, but younger players to step up here and have to kind of make this their own. And there's no longer so much of that old rear guard who've won everything in the game to fall back on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is something that's going to be key. And even up front, Joselu, obviously, like, he made his impact known towards the back end of the season. And it was still an important figure. So there's a straight through the centre of the side, you've taken away some not only experienced players, but players that had the Real Madrid DNA, right? And that is what is so crucial to this team. Last season, the expectation levels might not have been particularly high, but ingrained in them was understanding how you win and when you kind of put your foot down and make those big moments count. And that is the test for this new version of Real Madrid. Of course, Kylian Mbappe is used to winning, but he hasn't done it in La Liga. He's been doing it his whole club career in France, which isn't as good as Spain. And this is a different test because all these defenders are going to come up against him and be like, mate, you're not having it all your way. You already see, like, he's getting clattered a few times and sometimes he's overplaying already and possibly overthinking. And we'll get onto the fact as well that there's this pattern of play where obviously Vinny and Mbappe and Rodrigo are having to be quite fluid and swap out positions. And early on against Mallorca, when they're doing it and it comes off, especially on the goal that Rodrigo scores, and you're seeing the way the ball quickly interchanges between the three of them, you're like, wow, like, that's hard to stop. Yeah, it's pretty much unstoppable. But how often is that going to work? And when it's not working, like when it starts to change against Mallorca, can you go back to a more traditional, rigid method of how you win football games? Who's your guy that you turn to that you know? Are you crossing and heading? Is there a guy that you're going to be slotting the ball through and he goes in behind? Like, what is the method that gets them through those difficult periods? And that is going to be the test. Like, there's no doubt in the quality of that front three, but already straight on the back of the Mallorca game, people are saying, well, Bellingham wasn't himself in that game, so you need to change this. Bellingham needs to play top of the diamond. Mbappe and Vinny up front, Rodrigo will have to be a sub. It's like, well, we really need to get there for game two? Is that where we're at?
Rodrigo scored the goal.
So
it's like, oh, okay, so how are you going to play this? I mean, look, there is lots to like about it, right? And as you say, the opening 25 sort of minutes were excellent. They were good in real spells in the second half against Atalanta in the Super Cup as well. So I don't think there's any reason to panic. And, you know, you started this section by saying you think they go on and win the league. And I think that's probably worth reiterating after we've just, you know, looked at it. I'm just trying to kind of make it from a slightly critical manner and take a look at, you know, why it's probably not all going to be plain sailing, why it's not going to be one of those seasons you go, oh, they win it by 30 points.
No,
I don't think so at this point. I'm with you. And I think it's hard to look past Real Madrid in terms of what they've got, but equally, you know, half of me thinks, I don't know how this ends up working. Half of me thinks if anybody in the entire planet can make this work, it's Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, how many goals are these guys going to score? Last season, what, Bellingham got, what, 19 league goals. Vinicius came in on 15 and it was enough to get them there. But Bellingham playing this role that we saw at the weekend won't be getting 19 goals.
No.
So then you're like, okay, well, Kylian Mbappe surely is going to get 20 goals plus in his first season in the Liga. Really, what would I have said when he signed? 30 goals. I would have said Kylian Mbappe is getting 30 goals in his first season in La Liga. But that's going to be dependent on how he makes this work with Vinny. And we've said for months now, what happens to Vinicius Jr.? Like, where does he play? And how is he affected by having Mbappe in that front line with him, wanting the same gaps? They instinctively want to do similar things. They want to go into the same spaces and they want to score goals in similar moments. And so it's about sharing the load, and that's going to be the difficult thing for them early on. I mean, the one thing that Real Madrid really had to their advantage early on in the season is that they had a pretty friendly fixture list. And even when you look at it now, I mean, at the weekend, they're playing Real Valladolid at home. And you're like, okay, so that's a game. It really is a statement game that. Like, you can't come away from that one drawing 1-1 because suddenly everybody's feeling a bit deflated. And then you go on to it, you've got Las Palmas, you're home again to Betis. Tricky game away at Sociedad, then you go Espanyol, Alaves, and you're gearing up and gearing up towards end of September. Okay, Madrid derby, Atletico Madrid away, a massive occasion. And then a month later, you're going into your first Clasico. Yeah, so those are the moments you're kind of building up to right now. But the build-up has to go well, especially because Barcelona did get off to a winning start.
Yeah, I mean, let's come on to Barcelona. I think that's probably a good bit to segue onwards. And look, all change at Barcelona. There haven't been that many managerial changes this summer in La Liga. It's not like Serie A where 14 teams have changed at managers. There's a couple here and there, and Sevilla have changed managers. Barcelona, though, I think are the headline act. Hansi Flick has come in to replace Xavi. In terms of incomings and outcomings, Dani Olmo's come through, unable to be registered right now. Pau Víctor's come in from Girona and had a brilliant preseason. Out the door have gone Marc Guiu, Oriol Romeo, Sergio Roberto, who's another one of losing a lot of experience. And a lot of people might say that's time, but he's been there for a long time at Barcelona and he has given a lot to that club. Marcus Alonso and then Joao Cancelo and Joao Felix's loans were obviously both ended. So a lot of players there in that kind of list who you're thinking, well, you did jobs at points last season, right? And so it's a change of philosophy in that I think we're going to see Barcelona play a 4-2-3-1 under Hansi Flick. That's kind of been the strategy that he's used for most of his career. But also it's interesting to just kind of examine at this point where Barcelona are and what they've got going forward, because as much as it's a pretty scary time for Barcelona financially, it's also an exciting time in terms of the young players coming through from La Masia.
Well, that's it. It's all about youth. And I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing. Yeah. That's the difficult thing. There are so many young players. I mean, what have they got? If you would look at players 22 and under, there's got to be half the squad. Half the squad must be 22 and under in this Barcelona team. I mean, they're fielding like 3 17-year-olds at a time. And obviously, like when you're talking about these 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds, like, they are basically the best ones in the world. So like there's a reason that they're in the team. But at 17 and 18, there are huge parts of the game that you haven't yet learnt. And so even when we're talking about Madrid losing a level of experience, they're still making it up with players that have more experience than what Barcelona are going to be fielding on a week-to-week basis from what we're seeing early on.
Yeah, and this is it. I mean, especially in the midfield, you look at the midfield and you reel off the names that are currently in there, right? It's Gavi, Pedri, Pablo Torre, Fermín López, Marc Casado, Marc Bernal, then Dani Olmo and Frenkie de Jong. They're the only two, Olmo and de Jong, over the age of 21 in that list. That's wild. I mean, look, it's incredibly exciting. And there's some serious footballers in here that are going to get a moment this season, I think, and they're going to get those things. But in terms of what you're looking at in terms of the squad numbers and the squad, you can reel them off. Pau Cabarsi's taking the 2, 17 years old. Alejandro Balde's taking the 3, 20 years old. You're talking about Ronald Araujo as one of the most experienced players in this squad. He's only 25. And then, you know, Jules Koundé, 25. Eric Garcia, who's come back from that loan spell at Girona, he did really well, 23. The midfield I've just kind of gone through. And then you have Ansu Fati coming back in. We don't know what's going to happen with that one, 21. Paul Victor's 22. Lamine Yamal, 17. So there's some serious footballers here that of getting these moments and getting these opportunities who are all in this youth bracket. And there is an element of fearlessness that comes with that. But equally, it's going to have to be led from the top, and Hansi Flick's going to be very hands-on if he's going to mold this into a team that doesn't lose that. Because as soon as that team does gain a level of fear, you'd imagine there's potential for it to fall apart.
Yeah, and even, you know, the first game of the season is kind of on a knife edge. Valencia obviously bang up for the moment, and there's that chance that's cleared off the line. And it's such a huge moment. And you talk about all these young players, who proves to be the decisive player for Barcelona? 35-year-old Robert Lewandowski. So you're going from one extreme to another. Like Lewandowski, one of the older players in the league, when you've got a team that is made up of the youngest players in the whole league. So there's an imbalance there. There's not kind of a middle tier. Maybe that's why Dani Olmo's been brought in. He's 26 and he's like kind of in that middle ground where he's still got room for growth, but he's learned enough.
And maybe that's why the likes of Ferran, et cetera, haven't been shipped off. And I mean, partly some of that is to do with a market for them and the fact that they don't really want to go, and that's fine. But also there does feel like when you're talking about these players come, you know, who are starting to make a name for themselves, they do also still need some guidance from above, from players who've been there and done it, and not just at Barcelona, but also around the world of football, I think.
Like Gundogan. Gundogan baffles me. It absolutely baffles me. Now, look, I don't know how much Gundogan even enjoyed being a Barcelona player because he was desperate to get there. But every time I watched him, he seemed hugely frustrated by everybody around him. I don't know if that's because he'd come from such high levels at Man City where he could have a sense of reliability. But he spent a lot of the games being a very angry man because players weren't in position or were not making the right pass or weren't where he wanted them. And then you get to the next season and he's kind of surplus to requirements. And I wonder if part of the reason is because actually he'd been semi-critical of what they were doing and that he felt there weren't enough experience in the squad or that they were going too far in the other direction to be able to make a proper push to catch Real Madrid. But now to lose Gundogan, it leaves that midfield quite exposed and quite light in a way. Now, obviously, there's still time for Barcelona to somehow pull a rabbit out their hat. And there's talk today that, as we record this on Tuesday, that they're still going to look to make some signings in this window. But we all know that the financial restrictions are there. And this is part of the problem. This is part of the problem with the players they've already been looking at across this window, like whether it's Nico Williams or whether it's João Cancelo, like how do they even pay these players? So, look, it's Barcelona. They'll probably figure it out. But I just feel like there's an imbalance here that is going to mean that they're not consistent enough. And that's why I started the show by saying I still think Real Madrid win the league, because they've got a level of power in the squad that keeps them going through the duration of it.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting one. And look, Dani Olmo was a wonderful player, and I don't want to take away from that because I really, really like him. But if I was Barcelona and I got the funds from whatever happened last week with the selling of the studios, and that was the trigger to allow them to sign Dani Olmo, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I would have signed Martin Zubimendi because the glaring gap in the Barcelona squad is at defensive midfield. Now, look, perhaps Marc Casado and Marc Bernal have the most incredible year and they both break out as the new Xavi and Iniesta and, you know, everything's fine. And I would love that because it would be great to see them go back to a model where, you know, 50, 60% of the squad is made of La Masia graduates, because that's, you know, an incredible thing to have in your locker. But that's a lot of pressure on a 17-year-old and a 20-year-old to come out firing. And Frenkie de Jong's injured for a couple more weeks. Pedri and Gavi, both sort of struggling a little bit at the moment. I know Pedri came on, obviously, in this game, but struggling for full fitness. Gavi out for a couple more weeks as well. Andreas Christensen can obviously play a little bit in midfield as well. So, you know, there are other options in here. But if I was going to go and say, well, I've got 60 million to spend, we can only buy one player with that, where what part of the squad am I going to go and, you know, improve? It would not have been in this attacking three. And I don't think it's fair for me to be critical of someone like Chelsea and say, what are you doing signing XYZ player because you've got so many wingers? If I don't sit here and also say, well, it's one thing having, you know, you might want to get rid of a Ferran, you might want to get rid of a Rafinha, but they're not going anywhere, right? There isn't a market for it. So if those players are staying, buying other players to play in those positions when you do have gaping holes feels like a massive oversight from the Barcelona board. But I mean, at this point, are we surprised?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a fair point to raise. I mean, it's a huge game for Barcelona at the weekend coming up because they're playing Athletic Club, who are going to be one of the better teams in this division in the coming season. And obviously, it pits them against Nico Williams. So it's going to be a game which has a lot of eyes on it. And there's a fair chance he tears them up. Right? Like there is a good chance that Athletic go into that game, not just take something away. I think that they'll believe after watching what Valencia were capable of at times at the weekend, that they could go into that game and take 3 points away from Barcelona, which be, yeah, a really, really disappointing moment on the back of actually winning their first game of the season and actually having a small bumper over Real Madrid to get things going, because it almost certainly be completely gone immediately. So a good start, a promising start, and they showed courage as well to come back into the game and, you know, turn it all around and keep themselves, get themselves over the line, because that wasn't an easy game. And Mestalla was a real cauldron, it felt like, for that first match. But at the moment, I can't plausibly say that I can see Barcelona beating Real Madrid to the title.
Yeah, I mean, look, on the flip side of that, if Barcelona do beat Athletic and it'd be a massive early statement of intent on Saturday, and then they have Rayo and Valladolid after that, hang on, if they win the first four, people are going to start, one, they're going to stop asking questions. They're going to, the noise will go a bit quieter. And we all know what the Entorno can do around Barcelona, especially with new coaches, and especially with a coach without any real links to the club. Yeah, if that can chew up and spit out the likes of Xavi and Pep Guardiola, then it can do the same to Hansi Flick. But the way of quietening that down is by winning. And if they go into that and they win the first four of the season, I think a lot of these question marks, or at least a lot of the noise around this, might quieten down a little bit. And that would be a great start for Barcelona. I mean, it takes us on to the third part of this triarchy, if you will, Atletico Madrid. I mean, these three have finished in the top four for the last 12 seasons, I believe. So we're talking about a pretty, you know, structured dynasty from these three clubs. But Atletico had a bad season last year. They finished fourth. They finished outside the top three for the first time under Diego Simeone. And they've responded to that with one hell of a summer transfer window. So complete clear out. Morata left, Gabriel Paulista left, Stefan Savic left, Saúl left, Memphis left, Vitolo left, Mario Hermoso left. So far, Julian Alvarez, Sorloth, and Lenormand have come in. It looks like Conor Gallagher is going to be joining that party very soon. And I mean, to put it bluntly, this is the most excited I've been for an Atleti side in a while. Complete clear out, old guard's been moved on, thinned out the squad. They've got rid of some of the players who just weren't good enough anymore. Look, Stefan Savic was a brilliant servant, but his time had come. Hermoso was pretty good some of the time. Gabriel was a bit of a weird one. They felt like they signed him because he was there on a free. Saul's time was clearly up. Memphis always felt like a bit of a strange fit for Simeone. Morata went relatively cheap, but clearly he wanted to go, and I think they've replaced him really well with Alexander Sorloth. They've had a great window in terms of quality. They've spent a lot of money, but they've spent it relatively sensibly as far as I'm concerned. I think they're probably a player short in terms of centre-backs, but I don't think they're far away here. And if this clicks, they'll potentially be the most fun team to watch in the league, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Axel Witsel was a bit of an alarming performance in that first match when they drew with Villarreal on Monday.
They desperately need another centre-back.
But they do need another centre-back.
It's going to rely on outgoing. So Samu Omorodion might go to Napoli. There's a couple more being touted around, but we'll see how we go.
Yeah, because that back line could very quickly look like they're on their last legs. And you've got Azpilicueta and Jimenez and stuff. You know, that's potentially a flaw. It was difficult to read too much into the actual game overall, apart from the fact that they showed determination and a way to get something out of it in the end. Villarreal played well. And Sorloth to come up with that goal is exactly why they've brought him in to make the difference. So I think that they'll be happy actually to have taken that away from that game. And then obviously you can now start to bed in the new signings. Julian Alvarez came off the bench very late on. Obviously Conor Gallagher is yet to get going, but he'll be in that engine room. You say Sal going, obviously like Conor Gallagher will be.
There's a lot of midfielders here for two in the middle. This was one of the things I was looking at. I was kind of sketching out a design. I assume they're going to play in a 3-4-2-1 or a 3-4-1-2, depending on what it looks like. I assume it's going to be, if you've got Antoine Griezmann, Julian Alvarez and Alexander Sorloth, you've spent that much money on the front two, you've got to find a way to get Griezmann in there somewhere, which suggests it's probably a 3-4-2-1 with maybe Alvarez and Griezmann behind Sorloth. It means there's only two midfield spots, really. There's a lot of players in there. Gallagher now, obviously. Koke, who's club captain. Rodrigo de Paul. Barrios, who was excellent for Spain at the Olympics. And Arthur Vermeeren, who signed in January, who I think is a really good player. And Marcus Llorente can obviously play in there as well. I think he's probably going to do most of his work from right wing back, where he's just absolutely brilliant. But that's a lot of bodies. And Tommy Lamar plays in there these days as well.
Yeah. I think Vermeeren will end up leaving. Pretty imminently, but I mean, it's not a bad problem to have because the Atletico, it takes so much to play that role and it's so fundamental to how they're run that you kind of can't be caught short there or your season's done. So I can understand why they would be stacked up in that position. But obviously as well, this is, we're led to believe, the final season of Griezmann before he goes and joins LAFC next year.
He was brilliant last year, right? Had an incredible campaign individually.
Yeah, absolutely did. And, you know, it feels, you know, when all the talk was happening over the past 2 months, really since I've been in California, like it was just before that, that the talk really started of Griezmann. I was like, surely he's not coming now because this is too soon. Griezmann can't come and play MLS football yet. And it's not for now, obviously. MLS deadline now passed as well. But a final season of Griezmann in La Liga is pretty pivotal and also obviously at Atleti, pretty potentially iconic for him to have a good bow out season. So it's about making sure you're getting the best out of him and putting the right figures around him. I mean, when you assess La Liga, obviously you've got Simeone, he's been in La Liga since the day it was put together, it feels like. I don't know the exact amount of time, but I think it's something like 126 years, something like that. It's insane.
An Argentinian born.
It's insane. It's just insane how long he's now been part of the furniture at Atleti. And so that counts for a lot, especially when, as you say, Barcelona kind of starting again. And Real Madrid also in a transitional season whereby actually all the pressure's off of the Atleti side of Madrid for this year. They're not expected to really challenge for the title. But I would give them a better chance of actually doing that than Barcelona.
Yeah, I think so. And I think when we come back to these in the 5x5s in a couple of weeks' time, when we make our kind of locked-in predictions for the season, I wouldn't be surprised if I'm putting Atleti top. But I need to see a little bit more before I get uber excited about them. But if it does start to move very fast, there's a lot of players here that I think come in and they really suit the way that Simeone wants to play. And that's got to be an exciting thing, I think, for Atleti this season. And with that, I think it's probably time we leave the big three alone. After the break, we're going to be talking about the European challenges. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where we're starting to talk about the European challenges and who might look for that fourth spot in this year's La Liga. Feels like three of the spots are pretty locked in. It has done for quite some time. Last year, Girona, the surprise package, Dean. We're going to start with them. It's been a really, really busy summer, and I imagine quite a difficult summer because a lot of their best players have been pinched. Artem Dovbyk's gone off to Roma. Alex Garcia, who was absolutely sensational last year, has gone off to Bayer Leverkusen. Paul Victor left for Barcelona. Pablo Torre went back to Barcelona. Savinho now, as he's known, has headed off to Manchester City. Eric Garcia's gone back to Barcelona. Jan Couto finished his loan, went back to City and got sold to Borussia Dortmund. Borja Garcia has left as well. Now, in their place, they've worked really hard. And to be honest, you're looking at Girona and looking at that scouting network and thinking this is a really interesting summer to kind of replace the goals of Dobic. Abel Ruiz has come in from Braga, a Spanish youth international, led the team at the Olympics and has had a couple of pretty good years at Braga. Bojan Miovski's come in from Aberdeen, which was a pretty wild signing. They brought in two centre-backs in Ladislav Krejci, who played the Czech Republic at the Euros and was part of Sparta Prague's team. Alejandro Francis is a really highly rated young centre-back from Zaragoza. Donny van de Beek and Brian Hill, two players who struggled in the Premier League, kind of make a mark, have both come in. Oriol Romeo has returned after his one-year exodus to Barcelona. And they've brought in Paul Lopez as a goalkeeper, which I think is quite a smart move, an experienced head there in between the sticks. Mm. But Girona have lost a lot of the players who were, you know, crucial. That's four or five, maybe more, starters from that side. Yeah. From last year. And whilst you can replace them with talent, as I think they have done quite well, there's no guarantee that it's going to click in the same way. Plus, they now have the rigors of Champions League football to deal with as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and not a Champions League team really anymore. I think I'd be in mourning if I was a Girona fan and see how it was all kind
of decimated.
I think they're
just happy, honestly, happy just to have been there for that one year. Montolivi was absolutely the place to be last year.
But, like, it's done. It's gone. And getting that back, that feeling back of what you were getting week on week, it's going to take some doing for that to return. And as well, like, Dovbik, 24 goals, top scorer in La Liga. That's huge. That's huge. So I mean, you look at the players that you just kind of reeled off, a bit of a mishmash, and a couple of them are misfits. And that's probably, I mean, Brian Hill, look, this might be actually a good platform for him, to be fair. Van der Beek, no idea anymore what he is. Aurel Romeo, not sure if he's past it now.
He'll be fine in that midfield. I think he'll do a job for Michel. He's done one before. He was at Girona before, obviously, and played very, very well in the six. So he wasn't cut out for what Barcelona wanted to do. And I was wrong on that. I really thought he'd suit them. But alas, here, you know, this is what it is.
Yeah, and I guess what they have going for them is that in a season whereby normally you would have new expectation on, you say like Aston Villa in the Premier League, they qualify for the Champions League and now it's like, okay, how do we push on? How do we balance these two things? They won't really be expected to do that. And that maybe works in their favour and that they can just kind of be mid in La Liga, but maybe try to make the most of their opportunity to compete in a new format of the Champions League. Could be that.
Yeah, I mean, more than anything, I think it gives them a platform. And whilst I agree with you that some of these signings are a little bit sort of, are they going to work or not? There is a sense, you know, and I think of Leicester when and Girona were on the same kind of page and people were talking about it in the same kind of terms, I think. And after that, and obviously Leicester had a gigantic fall from grace and have returned to the Premier League. But there was a couple of seasons afterwards where they were sort of like, okay, they're in Champions League football. Okay, they're finishing a European spot. And I wonder if there's an element of something like Villarreal were able to do. Now, this is a long, long time ago, but came up, you know, established themselves and then established themselves as a club that was challenging for Europe. Now, do I think that Girona are going to be back in the Champions League spots? No, I don't. I think there's too much upheaval and I think that they have lost too many key players for it to be as good as it was last year or anywhere really close. But do I think they could finish seventh in a Conference League spot? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And I think that establishing that as the new normal would be seen as a massive win for everyone involved in the club, considering where they were just a couple of years ago. Now, you can have your opinions on, you know, the City Football Group and, you know, the idea of multi-club models and all of the above. But for, you know, speaking as kind of what would it mean to a Girona fan, to establish themselves as a regular European club would be an incredible feat for where they are. And I think it would make things pretty cool if they could go on and finish again. If seventh, eighth, I think those would all be good finishes for Girona. And whatever happens this season is probably not going to be as good as last year in terms of where they were at. But they have, you know, the incredible things of seeing these Champions League teams at Montolivi. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be such an experience. Yeah. That's great.
But opportunity knocks now, doesn't it, for the other teams that are kind of going to be in and around that fourth position. Possibly somebody will believe that they can come third and at least challenge a bit high. You know, the 1-2-3 is not is not written in stone. We don't know what we're
especially with flaws in there that we've just talked about for so long, right?
Exactly. Like, I think this will be actually a really exciting season in La Liga in terms of we've got the superstar status players in there, but we've also got an edge of uncertainty. And that will probably be a situation that Real Sociedad or Athletic Club can take advantage of. I think you have to be looking at the Basque country here for an opportunity for one of those teams to step forward, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hot on Athletic, and obviously we have a prior relationship with the club, so we will push that out there. But mostly they've kept the squad together so far. I think Guruzeta should kick on again. He had a magnificent breakout campaign last year. They brought in Alvaro Giallo, sensible addition, because I think he was both seen as a long-term replacement for Nico, who probably won't be there after this season. I think he will stay for this campaign. There's been a lot of chat recently that, you know, Barcelona might come back in. I just can't see it. There's no part of me that can see it. And I also don't think after he's taken the number 10 shirt there that he's going to walk away, you know, at this point in the season. I think he'll know that next summer he can probably make this move. So I think he will stay for one more campaign. Obviously, they've got Europa League football and the final at San Mamés. So there's a real opportunity there. But Giallo can play on either wing. He can play as an auxiliary striker to play in a different kind of way to Guruzeta. Unai Simon's out until I think about Christmas with a wrist surgery. But Julian Arrizabalaga was really, really good in the Cup when they won the Copa last year. They obviously, that whole run to the final he played in, he should be more than capable, I think, as a stand-in. And, you know, yes, there's some notable, you know, people who have left. Iker Muniain, who obviously was club captain for many years. Raul Garcia, Dani Garcia. There's a lot of experience left. And trumpet man, Asier Villalibre. But I think they've got enough. They've brought in Andoni Gorosabel, who's come in, was obviously a Real Sociedad player, went off to Alaves. He's come in on a free transfer. That's a smart bit of business. Gives him a bit of depth at right back. They've got some really, really exciting young players. And this centre-back partnership of Dani Vivian and Yeray is going from strength to strength. Feels like this is an opportunity for Athletic, because I think everyone else around them has got slightly weaker. And I don't think that Athletic have. I think they're right in the mix of this. And right now, they look like the punt, I think, for fourth spot.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. And again, it's just even just keeping Nico is extremely key to that, because this is a time, obviously, when we're seeing other teams have to fight for their own players. And a moment when Real Sociedad, they haven't lost Mikel Merino yet, but they will do this week. And just little things like that, little moments where you're not able to kind of keep the core of your team together. Obviously, Real Sociedad also lost Le Normand. So that was a big loss for them. So little just moments in the market like that have kind of worked in Athletic Club's advantage. I always have trust issues with them. I mean, as we know, they are a very flaky football club. They're an amazing football club, but trust is not one of the things that you would put on the club badge, because they'll let you down just as you think you can trust them.
Loyalty, but not trust.
Absolutely. Loyalty is actually probably the top of the list, isn't it? But let's see, because this will feel like almost like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them, because they've so far kept the superstar, because they had the momentum from last season where they were starting to kind of, break free from some of the concerns that I always have, that they won't win a trophy, they won't do it. They're like, yes, we will. And they've started to do those things. They've kept the star player. They've won the trophy. And now you're like, okay, go on then, go and prove it. Go and finish fourth. The biggest danger for them is probably somebody else in the league actually putting together a cheekily clever team like Villarreal, for example.
Yeah.
Who actually come from almost nowhere to be like, wow, look how good we are. And Villarreal probably would actually be the ones that I would be looking at as breakout potential, actually.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is really frustrated with them. Like, obviously, they've sold Solot for a lot of money. They've sold Philip Jorgensen for a lot of money to Chelsea. They've sold Jorge Cuenca to Fulham. They sold Johan Mojica to Mallorca. There's a couple of people who have gone off on free or have got to the end of their contracts. And there's some experience gone here because this is the old core, right? Alberto Moreno, Manu Trigueiros, who was club captain, Jose Luis Morales, El Comandante, Pepe Reina, Issa Mandi, Bertrand Traore, Etienne Capoue, Francis Coquelin. That is a lot of the players who were crucial to Villarreal going and winning a trophy, but being a force in Europe for a number of years under Unai Emery. They've all gone, right? They've all gone. And so have Gonzalo Guedes and Gerson Mosquera, whose loans have both ended. In their place have come in an interesting collection of people. Two goalkeepers, Luis Junior, who came in from Famalicão, who I really like, actually, and Diego Conde. And then they've brought in Willy Cambuala, the young centre-back from Manchester United. Ayoze Perez, who they nicked from Betis for about 4 million, who had a very, very good campaign last year. Sergi Cardona, who they picked up on a free, who's a good, good addition as well at right-back. Nicolas Pepe, Pape Gay, these all come in on frees. And Arnaud Danjuma, who's returned from his loan at Everton and scored on his return. So that was nice. But you're kind of looking at this and going, okay, so you've made about 100 million this summer already from Solot and Jorgensen mostly, but from the rest of them sort of put together. Last summer, you also made a lot of money because Chukwueze left, Nicholas Jackson left, Pau Torres left. So where's the money? And how are you going to spend it? Now, I don't want them to go out and spend 60 million on, you know, or attempt to buy Nico Williams for 60 million because he won't come. But I do think that you can be like, right, well, how are you going to replace those goals from Solot? Because right now, I don't think Nicolas Pepe and, you know, the returning Arnaud Danjuma are going to score the amount of goals that Solot did. He, you know, put together a season where he ended up being second top scorer. He probably would have won the Pichichi if he hadn't been injured on the last day of the season. He had a really, really good campaign. And Real Sociedad must be absolutely kicking themselves. They didn't buy him at the end of his loan spell, but that kind of is by the by. You're kind of looking at that and thinking, well, what are you going to do with this? You've got all of these funds. You're not rebuilding the stadium because everyone, I mean, that's kind of already been done. And there's that element of rebuild at La Cerámica that's kind of happened now. And we're past that. What are you going to invest in here? And it feels like a real opportunity for Villarreal to go out and buy another generation of really talented players, bring them through and do the same thing again and build that model of being able to, you know, put players through the coach trust. And Marcelino's already making noises about the fact that he doesn't feel this squad's strong enough. And considering they missed out on European football on the last day last season, they have a clean run at trying to get European football again. They have a very exciting manager, not necessarily in the way he plays, but someone who they trust, who came back in the middle of a mad year and pushed them up the table almost as soon as he walked through the door. They know exactly how they're going to play. Villarreal need to use the end of this market well. And if they do that, I think they are the natural choice to challenge for that fourth spot along with Athletic because they don't have European football and because they have a manager in Marcelino who has been there, done it. He's finished in the top six in his original three seasons at Villarreal. Then he obviously left and then came back and finished just outside last year, but that wasn't a full season. You're kind of thinking, well, he's obviously got the chops. He knows exactly what he's doing here. You need to back him. And that's why I'm sort of frustrated with them as well, as much as I'm excited about some of these players coming in.
Yeah, obviously last 10 days of the window, we'll see. Danjuma took his goal really well against Atletico. They played pretty well overall. I was pretty impressed with what I saw from them. So yeah, let's see if they can just kind of edge themselves up another level in the final weeks.
Probably just worth mentioning Betis and Valencia here as well. Betis are having one of those weird seasons, or weird summers, where they felt really in transition and a lot of players left. Chadi Riad, who obviously came in from Barcelona last season, had a good year and has moved on to Crystal Palace. Abner Vizitis, who never really settled. But Herman Petzela, who's been a big part of the club over two spells. Ayoze Perez, Willian José, and we lost Borja Iglesias, who obviously was on loan at Bayer Leverkusen last season. He's gone back to Celta Vigo. So both strikers have left. The player coming back in has been Juanmi, who's come back from loan at Cadiz last season because he was surplus to requirements and then started up front in the first game back. Perez has gone as well. So Betis look really, really light up top. Guido Rodriguez has left as well. Socrates and Claudio Bravo. So a lot of players out the door for Betis. Roman Perot has come back in from Southampton at left back. Diego Llorente, who I think is a good player to come in at centre back. And Ricardo Rodriguez, who I think is going to play centre back as well. Nathan's come in from Napoli. It didn't really work for him there, but there's definitely a player in there somewhere. And Iker Lozada's come in. But it feels like Betis desperately need to sign some creative players, some strikers, to be honest, just some out-and-out number nines, because there aren't really any in the squad right now.
Yeah.
And as much as there's players like Abdeaz Alzouli, who I'm really excited about and I think could have a breakout campaign this year after a really good summer, really good Olympics with Morocco, there are also this kind of sense that like Betis are three or four players away. They've got profit in this window that they have to play with. And whilst they always seem like they're on the verge of financially not being able to register players, that can't be the case given the amount of, you know, wages that have just gone off the books. So I'm intrigued by what they do with this. But Betis are, I mean, they're always hard to call because they're the most up and down emotional team in Spanish football. But it feels particularly difficult right now because the squad just doesn't feel like it's complete and the financials are all a little bit murky at the moment.
Yeah, fair enough. You're sat there in your Betis shirt, so you're trying to find as much optimism as you possibly can, as you usually have to as a Betis and Fulham fan and an Irishman and all the rest of it. So there we are. Valencia, do you hold much hope for them? I mean, obviously they were close to a very good result at the weekend, and there seems to be an air of some optimism this season, and it feels a bit little less poisonous, at least from afar at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, Ruben Borja has done a really, really good job in turning this around. He's, you know, he took them from being in the relegation zone, got them to survive, got top half finished last year. They did fade away a little bit towards the end of things. But, I mean, there's just this sense with Valencia that everything could explode, I think, at any given point. And, you know, we've called them mad before. And a lot of this is down to the ownership and this kind of standoff between the club and the fans and the people that own it and Peter Lim and all of these things. So it has been difficult, but it's been really quiet at Valencia. They haven't signed all that many players. We saw them bring Stole Dmitrievski on a free, which I think is a really sensible piece of business, especially if Mamardashvili is about to leave. Rafa Mir has come in from Sevilla, who should help them score a few goals. He obviously replaces Roman Yaremchuk, who left on his loan, when he didn't make his loan deal permanent. He's gone off to Olympiacos, I think. But it's been quiet. Dani Gomez has come in as well. So he's a youngster expected to have a moment. But it feels pretty solid. They've got good midfield and they've got a lot of youngsters who have come through their academy, who have come into this team and really, really impressed in their time in La Liga. I just think that maybe they haven't got all that much more than they did last year. I think they'll be in the mix because I think that teams around them have got weaker and they haven't massively, but I'm still not completely convinced that they're going to push, you know, anything above seventh.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I think, to be honest, that's probably about fair.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we've done the top and we've done the European contenders. After the break, we're going to be finishing the other things off with some potential relegation candidates and a couple of predictions for player of the season, etc., etc. Stick with us. Welcome back to the third and final part of our La Liga season preview here on Ranks FC. We're turning our attention to the bottom of the table and some potential relegation candidates. Dean, it feels like there's lots of big gaps, I think, in La Liga this season. It feels like there's the top three, and then there's a pretty big gap to the teams below them. And then I think after that, there's a pretty big gap and there could be a massive relegation scrap on here because there's a lot of teams that look relatively weak going into the new season.
Yeah, it feels like there's a quick fire section coming here where you have to zip through like who you genuinely see as candidates to go down. But look, you haven't mentioned Sevilla yet. And traditionally on a preview show, we should have been talking about them by now because we've talked about European contenders and stuff. Does that mean you're throwing them just into the middle pile, or do you think that things are so bad we can start showing concern that they could actually go and slip down?
Well, I mean, they were in this relegation battle last year, right? And I know you think I keep doing this because I'm a Betis fan, but honestly, I don't know what to say about Sevilla apart from what on earth are they doing? How have they fallen so far? They, you know, were involved in this last year, and I think that their squad is worse this time around. They have got themselves a decent manager, so there is that bit. Garcia Pimienta did I hesitate to say a good job. He did a really good job in the first half of the season with Las Palmas, although there are real concerns that his system and style got found out in the second half of the season, and those remain. But look at the players that left, right? Youssef En-Nesyri, top scorer last season, gone. Oliver Torres, been a massive servant for the club for so many years, gone. Marko Dmitrovic, number one goalkeeper, gone. Eric Lamela, gone. Rafa Mir, gone. The heart of the team, Jesus Navas, retired. Sergio Ramos, retired. Boubacar Soumaré, who came in on loan. Hannibal, who came in on loan. Velith, who came in on loan. All gone. They've brought in some decent footballers. Iheanacho's come in. Lucien Agum's come in, who was on loan last year. They've brought in Sambi Lokonga from Arsenal, who did a good job at Luton last year and should be given credit. Saul's come in on loan from Atleti. Not good enough to be part of the Atleti team. Really struggled last year and has now gone to Sevilla. There's a time that these two were, you know, direct rivals in competition, right? And now they're taking Atleti cast-offs to try and resurrect their career. Alvaro Fernandez came in as a goalkeeper, so that one's quite interesting. And Peke Fernandez, who's a really interesting player and has come up from the Segunda. But that's a worse squad than where Sevilla were at last year. Now, they went through managerial hell. But if it starts badly, and it can do with Garcia Pimienta, because his style of play is really patient, really slow, loves having the ball. And I don't think Sevilla fans are particularly patient at this point. They're not ready to, you know, have that all turned around again. If this doesn't start well, Sevilla could be right in the muck. And if they go through another season where they have three managers, I think there is a chance Sevilla get relegated. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I think to like kind of wrap this segment, I'm going to turn it into the Jack Collins show and use your Spanish wisdom we usually have guru wisdom around this time of the show, don't we? So it's time for some Jack wisdom. Okay, I'm going to reel off some teams and you kind of like tell us what their relegation potential is. Let's start with Alaves.
Yeah, I mean, they had a really good season last year where they were rock solid defensively. They've lost some big names, though. Amora Dion's loan spell ended, and so did Rafa Marins, who went off to Napoli from a big fee from Real Madrid. Javi Lopez has moved over to Real Sociedad, and Andoni Gorosabel has joined Athletic. That's a lot of the back line from last year who were so good and really didn't concede goals and were part of this entire shebang. They made a couple of really exciting additions. They brought in Manu Sanchez and Luca Romero, who had a great year last year. And watching Stoichkov make the step up after a few good seasons in Segunda with Eibar could be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But I just think they really lack goals. Like, nobody outside of Amora Dion scored more than 3 goals for Alaves last season. So Unless they find a goal scorer, they could be in the mix.
Fair enough. Espanyol, what are we thinking of them?
I think Espanyol are in all sorts of trouble. They're the weakest of the 3 promoted sides last year. They finished 4th in the Segunda. They ended up promoted by the playoffs. They beat Real Oviedo in a 2-legged final in some pretty chaotic fashion, to be honest. Since then, they've lost the Segunda's top scorer last season in Martin Brathwaite, who scored 22 times for them last season and was, you know, the kind of guy at Espanyol. He was the man. Mm. And even with that spell at Barcelona that they don't talk about. But it's a big hole to fill. But that was a pretty controversial thing too, where he was removed, basically not given a new contract. And then he started saying, I'm going to buy the club in response, which, to be honest, probably would have been loved by the fan base because they're not too fond of their Chinese ownership. Irving Cardona has been brought in from Augsburg on loan to try and fill the gap. He's been on loan everywhere. He was at Saint Etienne last year, but his numbers have never really set the world on fire. Perhaps it will be Alejo Velis on loan from Tottenham, who's the man that can step up to the plate for Espanyol, but again, didn't pull up that many trees when he was on loan at Sevilla last year. They lost their opener 1-0 to fellow promoted side Real Valladolid. Not a great omen, to be perfectly honest with you. And they feel a lot weaker than the last time they were in the division. I can't see them staying up.
Yeah, I actually really like Valladolid, but I'd agree that that wasn't a great start to the season, losing that game at the weekend. Okay, who we got left? Las Palmas. Any chance?
Yeah, last year, weird one for the lads from the Canary Islands. They stormed out of the blocks under Garcia Pimienta, as we said in the Sevilla segment. They're on the verge of Europe at Christmas, only to get found out in the new year and Now they haven't won a league game since February. So they stumbled over the finish line. They narrowly stayed up. A couple of draws in the last couple of games kept them alive. And now with some notable outgoings, Sal Coco left for Italy for about 7.5 million. And Sergio Cardona, who I mentioned in the Villarreal section, he's joined them on a free. They look a lot weaker at the back. Although they have brought in Jasper Cillessen, which gives them some experience. Even that comes as a double-edged sword, though, because it means that it might be Alvaro Valles going out the other way. He was excellent last year. He might be on his way back to Betis. We kind of yet to see, but you know, one of the better goalkeepers, I thought, in La Liga last season. End of loans for Julian Araujo and Maximo Perone, who's gone back to City for the time being, could well be big blows. They've been a really interesting summer, though. They've bought a couple of Scottish internationals in the form of Ollie McBurnie and Scott McKenna. And by bought, I mean, took them up on frees. They've loaned in Adnan Januzaj from Sevilla. And there's a couple of really exciting players. Marvin Park from Real Madrid at one point was being touted as an absolute superstar. I think he was the fastest player in Real Madrid's entire setup at one point. And Manu Fuster from Albacete, going to take that step up from the Segunda. Both of them, I think, will be fun to keep an eye on. But they look deeply light defensively. And given the second half of the season, I wouldn't surprise me to see them in the thick of the dogfight.
Mate, Adnan Januzaj crossing for Ollie McBurnie is something I'm here for every day of the week.
Scott McKenna's
They are staying up.
I hope so. You know, they've given a chance to another young coach. There's some really nice things about Las Palmas, but it is... it's difficult to see right now. I mean, look, I hope everyone does brilliantly, but and I hope Scott McKenna is the rock at which they build their church, but we'll see.
Okay, Leganés are probably surprised to find themselves even in this division. What chance they got of staying in it?
Yeah, I mean, they finished in the bottom half of the Segunda twice in a row and then went and won the league last year. So, I mean, they are the surprise package. They started the season so well, hung on a bit towards the end, but they secured the league title. Of the three promoted clubs, they're definitely the one that feel like they've got their, you know, house in order the most, right? It's a squad that feels a lot the same as the one that got them up. Most of their business has been making last year's loanees into permanent signings. Good start, play a decent performance away at El Sadar, which is a tough place to go against Osasuna. Credible point, 1-1 draw. And I feel like they might be just the most head screwed on, which could stand them in good stead, given that I've talked about a lot of teams here looking like that they could struggle. Valentin Rozier is a really good pickup. He should slot pretty seamlessly into the back four. And they lost a good keeper in Diego Conde to Villarreal, picked up to be the replacement for Philip Jorgensen. Juan Soriano, they brought in from Tenerife, I think. It's a smart piece of business. He's been pretty steady over the last couple of years, even if he did score an unfortunate own goal on his debut. Juan Cruz looks a good player. Roberto Lopez from Real Sociedad could thrive, I think, in his system. Borja Jimenez is a really good young manager. And I think Leganés, whilst probably are in the mix, have a pretty decent shot survival this season.
Very good. Real Valladolid, we'll probably end this segment on this one. They're quite unfancied, but they're fourth in the league after game week one. So what chance have they got of staying at those heights?
Well, they did beat Espanyol, so let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Look, they are a very weird little club. So they're owned by Brazilian Ronaldo, right? He's the man in charge. It's incredibly rare that you have a team promoted with the entire stadium basically still calling for the manager to be sacked. And even rarer that he yells a song, taking the piss out of the crowd for asking him to be sacked at the promotion party, and they all joined in. But that's Valladolid for you, right? Paolo Pezzolano, very, very interesting character. And he's going to need to turn his reputation around pretty quick, I think, if they're going to survive. He's going to keep them in the league. A good 1-0 win, as we say, on the opening day will help. They've been pretty busy in the market. Six of last year's loanees are on permanent deals. They've spent far more than the other promoted teams. And they've added Valencia centre-back Eray Coma to help stiffen them up in that area. What I'm really interested in is the returnees. Right, Selim Amala returns for a year on loan at Valencia with more flight experience. Kike Perez from Rayo and Darwin Machis from Cadiz. So there's some know-how coming in. And they've brought in Juan Milataza from Real Madrid. He's been at Getafe for the last two campaigns. He's not lit the world alight, but there's definitely some talent in there still. And I'm excited about seeing him go. So they probably need a little bit more firepower and they might be a bit of a basket case, but they're definitely interesting.
Very good. Very good. Are we happy to leave it there or is there anyone else you want to run?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a chance that Rayo Vallecano are in the mix, but I'm kind of hoping that they won't be. I'm hoping that they can turn things around from last year, hoping that was a bit of a blip after losing Iraola and promoting his assistant. So I'm, you know, fingers crossed that Vallecano are not in this mix. But yeah, I mean, that's it for me. I mean, the only one I suppose I wanted to add was I have a surprise package in Mallorca, because we saw what Mallorca were capable of on Sunday against Real Madrid. And I just have a feeling that Yagoba Arrasate, who did such a good job with Osasuna, is going to put together some nice stuff with his squad. They're a little bit light on additions, but the ones they've added are really sensible additions. Johan Mojica, top quality player. Mateo Morey has a chance to revitalize a drooping career after a couple of kind of lean years, should we say, at Borussia Dortmund. And Takuma Asano brings consistency and no little flair to the table. They have lost their last season's number one, Prayan Rajkovic. He went 11 million euros to Saudi Arabia. But Dominic Grief was excellent, right, in the opener against Real Madrid. And they also have Leo Roman, who was on loan in the second tier last year and had a really good year at Oviedo. They should push each other onwards. There's not much between the two keepers. So the 11 million might be allowed to be reinvested in the squad, the outfield squad, instead of having to buy another goalkeeper. Samu Costa, wonderful player in the middle. I wanted him at Fulham to replace Joao Palhinha, to be honest. And I think that Sergi Darder, who has been around for so long, but what a wonderful player in the right system, he should get a new lease of life under Arrasate, who will want a little bit more creativity and attacking flair than his predecessor, Javier Aguirre, who did a good job keeping Mallorca up. But I think they're trying to kind of push onwards with the project. I got a funny feeling that Mallorca, if they add one or two more, might be right in the mix for a European spot this year. They feel like a really strong side and they have a good manager in charge. The project seems to be moving in the right direction. Everyone seems to be on board and pulling in the same way. I'm excited about what Mallorca might be able to achieve this year.
Yeah, cool. Let's end this in a traditional prediction manner. Who will be the best new signing, do you think, from what we've seen so far in La Liga?
Julian Alvarez. I'm going to go for it. I think he's a glorious footballer. I think he will suit Simeone to a T. His work rate is incredible. His finishing ability is excellent. He can play in a number of different positions, does a number of different things really, really well. I think that people are not going to be talking about that price tag by the end of the season. I reckon he absolutely blasts out the gate and becomes an Atleti hero pretty quick. You?
Yeah, I think that's actually quite a good shout. I'm going to go with Mbappe because I think he's the best player in the world. But I can fully see that Alvarez, the fact he even left Man City to do this means that he's got a fire in his belly right now. Top scorer predictions. This is hard to steer clear of Mbappe, isn't it?
I was going to say, you're just going to say Mbappe for all of them. And I
don't
want to.
I really don't want to. But Mbappe is going to be the top goal scorer in La Liga. I don't think there's any avoiding that.
I think it could be Vinicius.
You think Vinicius could outscore Mbappe this season? That'd be a pretty hot take.
Yeah, I'm going to say that I think he might. I think that could be a real one. That he could, you know, but he also, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see who takes penalties and whatever, right? Like, who's going to step up to those moments? Because Vinicius...
I think they're doing a kick-up challenge before every penalty.
Flip a coin. Like, what's going on here? But like, I mean, that's a big thing. And I think it's important for that. But
it'll be Mbappe.
It's interesting. But yeah, let's see. But I think Vinny has the capacity and that burning desire and the experience in the league. Maybe it all comes together.
Okay, well, La Liga player of the season. Let's both steer clear of Mbappe for this one. I'll go Lamine Yamal, because if Barcelona are going to go for it this season, and he's already been doing what he's been doing at 16, 17, then who knows what he's going to be capable of in the next 2 years. And, well, he's magic, isn't he?
Marcus Llorente.
Oh,
it's a shout for you.
It's a bit rogue.
He is a bit rogue. And also, like, will he actually win player of the season? No, because I don't necessarily think his output is going to be there. Although, to be fair, he's already got a goal under his belt.
But you were good at player of the year in the Euros. You called that early on.
Yeah, and, I mean,
I know it wasn't the official one, but you were still probably right.
It was right. Yeah, it was right. Fabian Ruiz was the best player of the Euros. But I've got a feeling that if Atleti are good, Llorente is going to be absolutely crucial to like going back and forward. I think it's one of those where I'll be like, I think he'll be in the team of the year. Maybe not player of the season, but I think he'll be in the team of the year.
Okay, that's fair enough. It's got us away from saying Kylian Mbappe, which is what I've seen like 9 out of 10 pundits just say for all of these. So I think we've done quite well. Well done, mate. You've done a lot of homework there. Very good. I enjoyed it.
I've loved it. It's been great. And it's been great to talk about La Liga. I was worried then when we missed all of the starts of things that we weren't going to get that opportunity to speak about each league and kind of dial into them a little bit more. But I think we're in the swing of things. It's not affected it too much. Having a couple of games is actually
not a bad thing. I think everyone will love it, mate.
So
I think it's a good
100%,
thing.
100%. Yeah. So we'll be back next week to talk Serie A. So for now, all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you all have wonderful weekends as we start to gear up towards another weekend of action across Europe. And we will see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.